From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last month, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences released the Oscar nominations, and the acting nominees, all 20 of them, for Best and Supporting looked like a classic Hollywood smile, all white. And for the second year in a row, new research out this week says it's a systemic problem that goes way beyond the award shows, right across TV and movies, in front of and behind the cameras, America's dream world not looking like America. This hour on Point, Hollywood's diversity problem. Star Wars, The Force Awakens, back this year. You can join us behind us right there. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Is it getting weird, past weird? And what will it take for our Hollywood field of dreams to look like our country? What's it matter if it doesn't? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later this hour, we will hear from actress Ingenue Ellis, who plays a leading role in ABC's TV series Quantico. Joining me right now from Los Angeles is Darnell Hunt, director of the Ralph J. Bunche Center for African American Studies, professor of sociology at the University of California, Los Angeles. He's got an annual Hollywood diversity report coming out tomorrow. Darnell Hunt, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And from New York, Ziba Blay is with us, Voices culture writer for The Huffington Post, host of the pop culture podcast with Faria Roizen called Two Brown Girls. Ziba Blay, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Ziba, take us to Sunday night. It's the Academy Awards. It's got the all-white lineup for acting awards there, and you've got Chris Rock as the host. What do you see coming here?
Oh, man. It is going to be a very interesting night, to say the least, because, you know, Chris Rock is a comedian and a filmmaker who has been very outspoken about diversity in Hollywood. And it just so happened that this was the year that he's back to host, and this is the year that the Oscars decide to be the whitest it's been in a while. I think we're in for a lot of commentary and a lot of insight and a lot of awkwardness, and I think we need that awkwardness.
Quincy Jones is supposed to be up there presenting an award, and I think Darnell Hunt in L.A. that Quincy Jones said, well, I'll do it if you give me 5 minutes to talk about diversity from that Oscar stage. We know that's an eternity of time in Academy Awards presentation terms. Have they agreed to that? Are we going to have a Quincy Jones lecture on diversity?
You know, that's interesting. I haven't heard about that development. It would be very momentous if it were to occur. I'm sure you'd have a lot to say.
Yes, I am. I mean, he's maybe the right guy to do it, sort of senior statesman right there. Some people not attending at all. Actress Jada Pinkett Smith called for a boycott of the Oscars after only white actors were nominated for acting awards. Here she was announcing she wouldn't be attending the awards ceremony. This is a video on Facebook.
I asked the question, have we now come to a new time and place where we recognize that we can no longer beg for the love, acknowledgement, or respect of any group?
She's not attending, and some others are not as well. Darnell Hunt, what has happened with this? I mean, things just exploded when, for the second year in a row, that all-white lineup came out. We saw the photos all over the place, and it's white, you know, 20 times. Has this simmered down in the month and more that it's been out there as an issue, or is it still exploding, Darnell?
You know, I think it has legs. I mean, this is a real issue. It was one thing last year for the nominations to come out and people of color to be snubbed in the acting roles, but you also remember last year we had a prominent African American director, Ava DuVernay for Selma, you know, recognized by the Directors Guild, but not even nominated by the Academy. And it's so rare that you have a person of color as a director. So we're talking about an issue that's been somewhat endemic in the industry. It's part of the industry's DNA in a way to kind of exclude people of color and women. And I think that 2 years in a row, given the increasing diversity in our society, I mean, people of color are almost 40% of the population right now, and they over-index in every way. If we look at movie audiences, if we look at TV audiences, And I think people have just said enough is enough. The handwriting's on the wall. And I think that until the industry responds, this is going to continue.
You know, there's a lot of talk about organizing the Academy of Motion Arts and Pictures so that the votes might come out different, getting different, a new membership in there. Of course, they have an African-American at the head of that organization. Still, the votes have come out as they've come out. And then we had this USC report, University of Southern California, Annenberg Center this week, saying that up and down TV and movies, Ziba, in front of the camera and behind the camera, women and people of color underrepresented right across the board. We'll get into why that happens, but what's your sense of the impact of that? If you're an American of color and everything you see in terms of TV and movies is tilted toward white faces, what's the impact?
I think the impact, representation is important because it's important to be able to see yourself reflected in the culture. I think what it does is that it reminds you that you're human. I know that's a little intense, but that's really what happens. But I think beyond me as a Black woman being able to see myself on screen, I think it's important for non-Black people, non-people of color, to see people of color have their stories told. Because what happens is that, a Black person, a Hispanic person, an Asian person can grow up in this country and watch movies and TV shows with white, white leading characters. And you train yourself to understand the humanity in those characters because you have no other choice, But the same isn't it's not the same for white people. White people don't really get the chance to train themselves to see the humanity in characters of color because there are none on TV. And I think that's why we need to see more. The impact of not having that is it's a very real impact in the real world where, police brutality, not being able to see a young Black boy as a boy and seeing him as a threat, as a monster. It all comes back to the way we are reflected in pop culture. It's all connected.
Darnell Hunt, I wonder, we're going to explore, but I wonder the first take from you at why this happens. There's a lot of history here. So, we're not naive. Eyes wide open. But you have said that on screen, whether it's TV or movies, you've said diversity sells. Diverse audiences are buying the tickets. So why haven't the faces on the screen evolved to keep up with that? Why?
Well, I think the basic and simple answer is that we have conflicting interests at play here. On the one hand, it's certainly in the interest of the institutions, the multinational corporations that own the networks and studios, to cater to the audiences. And audiences, of course, are increasingly diverse, and we know they want diverse content. So it makes sense from that perspective to make more diverse programming, not less. And when in fact, as we know from the USC study, as you know from all of our studies, as you know from the study that we're going to release tomorrow, they're not making as much diverse content as they could and should be. So it begs the question, well, why aren't they if it makes business sense? Well, because at the individual level, there are other interests. And we're talking about largely white men who are the heads of these organizations, studios, networks, producers, showrunners, disproportionately as they have been traditionally. They occupy these relatively powerful positions. It's a very lucrative industry. At the same time, it's very risky. Most new TV shows fail. Most movies don't do as well as mm-hmm. one would have hoped.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is they surround themselves with people they feel comfortable with, other white men typically they've worked with in the past or people that on paper have a track record. And, of course, it's a catch-22 for women and people of color because you can't develop a track record if you don't have opportunities. And so the process just reproduces itself over time. They keep surrounding themselves with people who know how to make a particular type of product, that is to say something that's not very diverse. They keep making those projects and to the exclusion of other things that are more inclusive and more diverse. And so we have this conversation year in, year out. It's like a huge battleship on the ocean that's hard to turn around.
You know, if that's what it is, there's a kind of entropy there and a club at the center of things, which maybe just replicates itself, even though, if Darnell's right, Ziba, even though that may not be the best path to profitability, and these are businesses, after all, then maybe Jada Pinkett Smith is right. Maybe it takes the stick of dynamite of boycotting and resistance to turn the battleship, Ziba.
Yeah, I mean, I think something has to be done. I think, you know, it's a huge message when the wife of and one of the biggest black actors in Hollywood says, no, I'm not going to continue to participate in something that, you know, fails to recognize me and my people. But I think
Will Smith, of course, he was up for or in there for concussion and no nomination.
And no nomination.
We hope it's more than just my husband was snubbed going on here.
Well, yeah, see that. And, you know, and Jada and Will have received some pushback over that because it's like, you know, oh, well, you guys have been doing so well for so long. And now this one moment when you don't get the Oscar nom, suddenly you care. And that's valid. But I think at the end of the day, it's going to take our black elite in Hollywood to change the conversation because no one's listening to the little guys. And I think that, you know, someone like Will Smith speaking out has generated such, such interest in this story. And for me, what it's really about is taking this away from this sort of trend of let's talk about diversity. I hate the word diversity. Let's talk about inclusion. Let's talk about solutions. Let's talk about what we can actually do to change this. And I think that's going to be, and it's already starting just with the conversation we're having now. So
Ziba,
I think that's going to be.
Ziba, stand by in New York. Ziba Blay with the Huffington Post and the Two Brown Girls podcast there. Darnell Hunt at UCLA at the Ralph J. Bunche Center for African American Studies. Behind us right here, Earned It by The Weeknd, featured in 50 Shades of Grey, nominated for Best Original Song. It's the only person of color, Weeknd, this is Abel Tesfaye, to receive a major nomination from the Academy this year. The only one right there. 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. We're talking about Hollywood's diversity problem. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Oscars. Straight ahead now, Sunday night, Hollywood's diversity problem and how America sees itself on screen. Every nominee for an acting prize this year is white. Second year in a row, that's the case. And that's sort of the tip of the iceberg here. People have kind of lost it a little bit this year, saying, wait a minute. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Are you feeling the exasperation of the Oscars so white hashtag? Does it look like a fluke when every face in that lineup is white? What's going on here? And when will America in the movies and television look like America in the real world? A little bit of the Carol soundtrack behind us here. Carter Burwell composed the score. The movie and Burwell are up for Oscars. White. Okay, there's going to be white, but what about the whole span of Americans? Darnell Hunt is with us, director of the Ralph J. Bunche Center for African American Studies, professor of sociology at UCLA. His Hollywood Diversity Report comes out tomorrow. Ziba Blay is with us from New York, voices culture writer for the Huffington Post, co-host of the Two Brown Girls podcast. Anjanou Ellis will join us in a few minutes. She stars as Miranda Shaw in the ABC series Quantico. Gregory Elwood is with us in just a second here, co-founder of HitFix, film critic himself out of L.A. A lot of attention to this Saturday Night Live, having some fun with it, took on the lack of diversity in Oscar nominations. Here's a sketch showing the nominees for Best Actor at a Screen Guild Awards. This is their send-up. Dave, a white librarian who makes a brief appearance in this hypothetical movie, receives the nomination for a movie about the first black Supreme Court justice.
For Thurgood, the story of the first black Supreme Court justice, Thurgood Marshall, playing the role of Dave, Barry Peel.
I can't wait forever, Marshall. Do you love me or your books?
Viv, if I'm gonna make it as a lawyer, I got to work 10 times as hard as these white folk. It's the only way it's gonna work.
Hey, guys, we close in 5 minutes.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Dave. Major motion picture about Thurgood Marshall and is the white walk-on librarian who gets the nomination. John Oliver last week, on the Last Week Tonight, weighed in on diversity issue in Hollywood in his segment, How Is This Still a Thing? John Oliver.
And when Hollywood needed actors to play Egyptians in Exodus, Gods and Kings, it knew just what to do.
Moses, Ramesses, you grew up together, close as brothers.
That was a guy from Australia and a guy from Britain, pretending to be two guys from Egypt, a country in Africa. And if you like that, don't miss Gods of Egypt opening Friday, starring a Scottish guy.
I shall be your one true god.
Wow, that's the whitest Egyptian since these four.
Okay, off John Oliver's Last Week Tonight, but a lot of people this year are not laughing. Will in Spring Hill, Tennessee. Will, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hello, everyone.
Hi. What do you think, Will? What do you see?
Well, it's been the long-established prejudice for years. It took Hattie McDaniel, Sidney Poitier, Harry Belafonte to break the color barrier, but it's still a well-established and prejudice that goes on with this because, I mean, if you really look at it, when you have other shows on TV like Scandal, How to Get Away with Murder, they try to diversify the audience and everything because everybody is not the same. Everyone is different.
Yep.
Everyone thinks differently and everything. But when you keep this prejudice going on, you're only demeaning the art form of what television, movies, entertainment, and everything. Because when you do that, you're undermining what this culture can bring. And as long as you continue that practice and everything, you make Hollywood an all-boys club, and especially the all-white men that's running it. And if you look at Tony Goldwyn, his father was the founder of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, who plays president on Scandal. And that's a highly diverse show that everyone watched.
It comes right on down, demeaning the art form itself. That is interesting the way you put that, Will, and I appreciate your call. I've got more to get to, but I want to, if I may, have join us from Los Angeles. And Darnell and Ziba, please stand by. Gregory Elwood is with us as well, film critic, co-founder of HitFix, recently launched awardscampaign.com. It's a website that gives commentary, insight on the movie industry. Gregory Elwood, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Fine. Now, I don't want to put you in the white chair here, but put yourself in the Hollywood boss chair and look out on this whole scene that we're looking at. Hollywood, movies, TV. Why is this happening? If things are not aligning with the population, sometimes even close of the country, why is this happening, Gregory?
Well, I think Darnell sort of touched on it earlier. A lot of it comes down to, in the executive suite, you know, simple economics. And I don't think it's as an apparent overt sort of racism or even subconscious as many people might think it is. So fewer different types of movies are even being made these days that part of the problem is, you know, you've got animated movies for kids, you've got R-rated comedies, you've got superhero movies, slash blockbusters, and then you've got prestige pictures. And part of the problem is it allows for less diversity overall for everyone.
Now, why is that? This isn't a question of types of movies. You can have any kind of movie you want, but why should the people in them be overwhelmingly white?
I don't disagree with you, by the way. I think it's a systemic problem.
Sounds like you do. You said that the type of movie dictates the reality that we're seeing.
No, apologies, Tom. I think you may have misunderstood my point.
Okay.
My point was, with those films, those are the type of films that are being made. It doesn't mean that the people who are starring in those films shouldn't be representative of the whole country or the world. And I think part of what the problem, though, is what Darnell sort of alluded to earlier, is the people around you, the people that you know are going – let me take a step back. If you're an executive in studio in Hollywood,
okay,
and you're putting $200 million – up for a movie,
yep,
or $250 million for a blockbuster, and that doesn't even count marketing, which, yep, is probably worldwide another $100 million,
okay,
you're going to stop and say, well, which star do I know is really going to be in this movie and going to guarantee our best chance of success?
Mm-hmm.
And the number of African-American or Latino or – I mean the whole idea that Asian-Americans are so underrepresented in Hollywood is, mm-hmm, is like another 2 hours worth of a show,
yep,
is – but if you look at it, they're on one hand. If you look at the number of R-rated comedies, which don't cost as much, but they still want to guarantee who's that star that's going to be in there. Almost all of them star Kevin Hart. It's the only African-American like comedic star these days because he guarantees that they're going to get an opening, that they're going to make their money back. So
you can't get there because you're not there already. You need a star, not enough of this, the big star, not enough of the big stars are minority. And so you go with a white and that's that. How do you ever get out of that, Gregory?
It's basically Hollywood is now sort of the great thing about the Oscar So White movement is it is pressuring Hollywood into making decisions that they should have done in the past based on creativity that they hadn't done before. So someone like Ava DuVernay, who made Middle of Nowhere, which was a great Sundance hit, and then got the chance to make Selma, a movie that was financed at the last minute, that entered into the award season sort of sort of slightly under the radar for a studio that had other pictures that were its priority. Now she's about to do a big Disney movie. It was just announced. And she's got another picture, at another studio that's going to probably go right afterwards. So and then you've got someone like Ryan Coogler who just did Creed, which was, by the way, a gutsy move for MGM in their mind, not in ours, to green light because it was a Rocky sequel and those movies hadn't done well.
Yep.
And he had come off doing Fruitvale Station, a really small indie movie, which, by the way, it is totally justified to say if you were a white male director out of Sundance, you would have gotten that chance easier than someone like Ryan Coogler would have. But now Ryan is about to do a Marvel movie. He's going to do Black Panther. So the change is happening. It is absolutely not fast enough, but the Oscar So White movement has put pressure on the studios to sort of be like, okay, we need to give the chances to African-American filmmakers and Latino filmmakers just as much as we have to all these white filmmakers who we feel safer with.
So interesting, these dynamics. I want to take that to you, Darnell, but just for a second here, this is from Creed you mentioned, Gregory. Of course, it's the one where former heavyweight champion Rocky Balboa, Sylvester Stallone, plays a mentor and trains the son of his late friend and former rival Apollo Creed. Adonis Donnie Johnson, played by Michael B. Jordan, African-American actor, is upset in this little scene where Rocky refuses to undergo chemotherapy for cancer. Sylvester Stallone received this film's only Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actor.
I've seen it before. It gets as bad as it can get. And most of the time, you don't win it.
You know, but I don't care. I ain't training if you don't get the treatment. So if I fight, you fight.
Okay, there you've got Sylvester Stallone and Michael B. Jordan. Stallone with the Oscar nomination. Darnell Hunt, is that another kind of a Lifetime Achievement Award here for a white actor? Another piece of evidence that its legacy still at work in the movies?
Well, you know, it's a reflection of business as usual at the Academy. I mean, it's no accident that, you know, the film Straight Outta Compton. I mean, who gets the nomination there? The white writers of the film. You know, so we're talking about human nature, and we're talking about an Academy that has a particular demographic makeup. And, you know, people are people. People aren't infallible. You know, they're not perfect. They make mistakes. This is not a science. If it were, you know, all films would make huge amounts of money and every TV show would succeed, but they don't. And so you have people making decisions based on their experiences, their tastes, and in the process, excluding people of color who are just as worthy but who just don't get the recognition.
Wait, are you really saying that the entire Academy of Motion Pictures is going for the screenwriters of Compton for a nomination because they're white over all the African-American actors?
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that, you know, that to me is a perfect illustration of business as usual and how things work. People have a certain frame of reference and things they see, things that are important to them. You know, there were other things about that film that could have been rewarded that weren't. But it's not just an accident that the thing that was selected, or rather the element of the film that is acknowledged, is the writers who happen to be white. You know, in the Stallone is the actor who gets recognized for our Creed.
Yeah, hang on just a second, Gregory Ziva. We're looking at the Oscars straight ahead now in Hollywood's diversity problem. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Gregory, in L.A., I hear you spluttering there.
Yeah, I apologize. I just have to say something about the screenwriter for Straight Outta Compton. I think it's sort of unfair to sort of blame her for getting a nomination for a movie which Ice Cube hired her to write. He didn't hire an African-American writer.
No, it's not blaming. I think he's saying, look, but this is who the Academy has put up for the nomination.
Right,
not that she's wrong.
And you're right. Blame is the wrong word. But to say that that's the only reason why the Academy picked it. They picked it because they loved the story. They didn't pick it because it was a white female writer. And I think that that's something that, that might get lost here. They loved the story. Listen, Universal thought they were getting a Best Picture nod for Straight Outta Compton. I mean, I talked to them at an event 2 weeks before. They were as stunned as everyone else. Everyone who covered this, I cover this 12 months a year, thought Straight Outta Compton was getting nominated. A lot of movies think they're getting nominated, and then they don't because the Academy makes decisions that maybe everyone in the world doesn't agree with. But it happens.
Co-writers on that film, Jonathan Herman and Andrea Berloff, and yes, they happen to be white, out of Compton. Here's a little bit from Straight Outta Compton.
Next question. Will you be more careful about what you say, how you say it?
No. Probably not. No.
Why? Freedom of speech includes rap music, right? But we exercise in our First Amendment, as far as I'm concerned.
And the government wrote that.
But irony, irony, it's the white screenwriters. Now, you know, maybe that was the best part of the film. I don't know. Nick in Clawson, Michigan. Nick, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I think one of your guests hit the nail on the head. Hollywood is a business. And what a lot of people, I think, don't realize is that the votes for the Oscars are campaigned for by a lot of studios.
Sure, we see it.
Harvey Weinstein, guys like him. Yep. They spend thousands and thousands of dollars to make sure that their pictures, their stars, are nominated. Because then if they can put that on the billboard in front of the picture, Academy Award
box office,
nominee.
Yeah,
they make more money on the film that way. For instance, I love John Oliver. But the two pictures that he said are starring Scottish guys instead of Egyptian guys, name one Egyptian actor that could be a box office draw like Christian Bale. I don't think anybody could.
Well, you stopped me there, but I mean,
looking to make money, that's all they care about.
Yeah.
And so I don't even watch the Oscars anymore because I know it's just a big marketing campaign.
Well, okay, and yet it's also a cultural touchstone, and it's how we understand who are our heroes in cinema terms. It sort of sets up the mythology of our country. Ziva Blay, if you were that movie executive and you're putting $200 or $300 million into a big film, Gregory Elwood says you'd be awfully tempted to put a white star in there who would feel most likely to bring you a return on that. Would you have the nerve to break the pattern, Ziva?
I think it's way too easy to just say, oh, well, you know, where are you going to find a famous Egyptian actor where there's none? You know, it's just too easy to say that because all that does is give an excuse to keep things going the way they are. And yes, you know, Christian Bale may be a box office draw of a kind, but we just saw that Oscar Isaac and John Boyega are now box office draws. You know, like there is the capacity, there is the ability to change the conversation and change the way that the business works. And I think, as you're saying, it's this fear and it's this, you know, complacency that results in, you know, picking Gerard Butler, who quite frankly has had flop after flop after flop come out, picking him as the actor to be in a film about Egyptian gods. I reject that, and I think it's lazy, and I think it's boring, and I think that we're at a place now, we're at a tipping point now where we can change it. We don't have to keep going by that same standard.
A tipping point. Yeah, Darnell.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I agree completely with what Ziba is saying. I mean, you know, stars don't fall from the sky. They're made. You know, stars are marketed, they're developed,
yep,
given opportunities. You know, and so to use the excuse that we can't find any stars, you know, who are diverse, I mean, it's the same old argument that we've used throughout this nation's history when people of color, women, and other groups were excluded. You know, it's just a lazy excuse that allows business as usual to continue.
We've got more to look at here. Darnell Hunt, please stand by in Los Angeles, and Gregory Elwood there as well at HitFix. Ziba Blay at the Huffington Post in New York. Listeners, you can join us. We are looking at the Oscars right ahead of us now and Hollywood's diversity problem. When you go to the movies, do you see yourself, your world on screen? Do you see a whitewashed version of that world? Is Hollywood just making what people will pay for? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Writing on the wall behind us, Sam Smith. Featured in the James Bond franchise movie Spectre, nominated for Best Original Song. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. How do I live? How do I breathe? When you're not-
swear I'd give it all up for you. I have to risk it all, 'cause the writing's on the wall.
This On Point podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you have a passion that you obsess over, if it keeps you up at night, if you live for it, you should show it off. With easy-to-use tools and templates, Squarespace helps you showcase every detail of what drives you. Because if it's worth the effort, it's worth showing to the world. Start your free trial today. Visit squarespace.com/onpoint. That's squarespace.com/onpoint. You should. Squarespace.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Oscars. Straight ahead now, Hollywood's diversity problem and how America sees itself on screen. Every nominee for an acting prize this year, white. Second year in a row. And that's sort of, we're hearing, the tip of the iceberg. A lot of attention to this in the month and more since those nominations came out. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Are you going to be watching the Oscars Sunday night? What do you think Chris Rock is going to do with all this? Are you thinking, so what? Or are you thinking this is a real problem? And do Americans of all colors need to see themselves up there in the game, making things happen, taking leading roles in movies and television? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. A little Bridge of Spies soundtrack behind us right there. Five nominations, including for Best Score. Thomas Newman for that. Gregory Elwood is with us, film critic, co-founder of HitFix, joins us from L.A. Darnell Hunt is here, director of the Ralph J. Bunche Center for African American Studies at UCLA. His Hollywood Diversity Report due out tomorrow. Ziva Blay is with us. She is co-host of Two Brown Girls, the podcast about film, TV, and pop culture, writes for Huffington Post as well. Here's a little bit from Beast of No Nation. A young boy, Agu, is forced to join a group of soldiers in a fictional West African country. The commander, played by Idris Elba, Beast of No Nation received no nominations for this year's Oscars.
Are you ready to fight? Only checking the brave.
Yes, sir!
Victory?
Yes, sir!
Victory?
Yes, sir!
Seizes!
Pretty good reviews, no nominations. I don't know. Here's Spike Lee on this, talking with the Good Morning America's George Stephanopoulos, said the race problem goes way beyond the Oscar prizes.
This whole Academy thing is a misdirection play.
Okay, how?
We're chasing the guy down the field. He doesn't have the ball. The other guy is high-stepping the end zone, so it goes further than the Academy Awards. It has to go back to the gatekeepers.
CDS.
Yes, the people who have the green light vote.
The green light vote. What gets made? With us right now from Montreal in Canada is Anjanue Ellis, actress, producer. She stars as Miranda Shaw, director of the training program at the FBI Academy in Quantico in the ABC series Quantico. Anjanue Ellis, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
We're good. And we're having a good, thoughtful conversation about why this happens and why it goes on. You're in the thick of it, and you've landed a pretty darn good role. But you're still not happy. Why?
First of all, I work in the television industry, mm-hmm. and the television industry is not the film industry. It's very, very, very different.
You're saying it's better? USC came out this week with all kinds of numbers saying even TV's got all sorts of problems.
Yeah, it does. There's no question about mm-hmm. it. There's no question about it. But in terms of representation or existence, even. I think representation is probably a poor word. I think the word is probably existence, the existence of women of color, particularly black women especially, is virtually non-existent in films. What there is on the part of networks now television networks specifically, is that there is a concerted push to herald voices like Shonda Rhimes, like Lee mm-hmm. Daniels, and because they do that, you have women, you have black women, you have black folks, I work on a television show that, you know, features an Indian woman as the lead, and one of the other leads is a woman who is Palestinian and Egyptian. I mean, that's unprecedented in our history of television and film, where these women are the leads of a show. And the film industry does not want to come in step with that, and I think that is woefully unfortunate. It shortchanges not just actors; it shortchanges the American people.
Why do you think that's happening? Do you think it's that white movie executives, at some level, they still want their dream world, their field of dreams, to be white?
I think there's no question about that. I have no question about that. I think that the big purple elephant in the room is this is white supremacy, and I'm not talking about white people. I'm talking about white supremacy, because white people suffer from white supremacy in the same way that African Americans and people of color do, and people who are disenfranchised just as much as white as anyone. So white supremacy prevails. And when Spike Lee was so poignant this morning and talking about the gatekeepers, those gatekeepers are all over. They're everywhere. My personal passion right now, beyond the Oscars being so white, mm-hmm. is this larger issue that we have about what is the American narrative, and what is the American narrative that we want to project to the world. I'm from Mississippi, mm-hmm. for example,
yep.
and I come from a state where we have the symbol of the KKK as our official state emblem. Now, we differ from South Carolina. South Carolina had the flag in one place on its Capitol building. It is our official emblem in the state of Mississippi. Yesterday, a viable bill that could have been introduced to end this,
yep.
died in committee. It didn't even make it in front of a vote. Every black child who goes to public school in the state of Mississippi has to walk under that flag to get an education. The first thing they see is an insult to their humanity. So to me, the Oscars being so white is symptomatic of this larger issue that we have in this country about who we are as Americans and the narrative that we want to project to the world. This is not a Oscar problem. It's not a Hollywood problem. It's not a Mississippi problem. It is an American problem. For example, Lady Gaga.
Okay.
She so beautifully sang the Star Spangled Banner.
Wow, that was something else, yes.
Yeah, right. Billions of people throughout the world sang our national anthem. Behind her was a Confederate flag. Whitney Houston, when she sang the milestone performance of the Star Spangled Banner, while she was singing, this beautiful woman was singing in front of a Confederate flag.
You mean that was on a state flag, you're saying?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Everywhere where we have our state flags, where this country has our state flags, you know, in all in representation, that flag is there.
Anjanou Ellis, stand by for just a second. You raised something so interesting here, and I want to go right to it, if I may, for a moment with Gregory Elwood. Hollywood has huge markets overseas now, and Anjanou says, what is the image of America we want to show to the world? Does the world, as a market, in business terms, Gregory, does it want to see the diversity of America? Would these films do as well or better if they were more cast in a more diverse way?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. You know, the argument that always comes back from Hollywood is that films with African-American leads don't traditionally do well unless you sort of have an outlier like Will Smith.
At home or abroad? I'm asking about
abroad. Abroad.
Okay.
And the irony, of course, is that one of the biggest franchises out there these days that has done blockbuster money, and in fact it did more overseas last year than the Avengers Age of Ultron did, is the Fast and Furious franchise.
The last installment did, I think it did $1.5 billion just overseas.
Which is kind of every color of America par excellence.
Exactly. And I think that sometimes Hollywood doesn't even see their own examples of what can work when it's sitting right in front of them.
We've got a lot of callers for all of you. Chris in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Chris, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call, Tom.
Yeah.
I have a couple of points to make here. First off, the population of blacks in the United States is under 13%.
Well, we're talking about people of all colors here. I mean, point taken, but then what? It's like nearer 40 when you bring in all the minorities, right?
Exactly.
Right, but the people right talking
and it's increasing by half a percent
here.
Every year.
Yeah, so what about it, Chris? You're saying that, therefore, there shouldn't be more?
Otherwise, the performances are not going to be out there that you're going to get from the white community. But the other point I'm making is, do we need to have an affirmative action for acting this way? Somebody who probably wasn't supposed to be nominated should get in there. I find it very frustrating to listen to your guests. And I also find it very frustrating, and I want to find out how they feel about the Black Lives Matter movement. I was married to a black woman for 7 years, and I say black because she was from Haiti.
Okay.
And for 7 years, and I have to tell you, the Black Lives Matter movement has deepened any divide I'd ever had, because do they think that might be reflecting on maybe why these people aren't getting voted? It's just, they're just sick of watching out of control people screaming and yelling and blaming white people when they don't succeed.
Wow, Chris,
that's
what's
happening with the Oscars.
Okay, I hear you, but we've seen all kinds of out of control people of all kinds of colors and all kinds of circumstances. Let's just note that. Darnell, let me bring it to you. Chris says, what are you asking for? Are you asking for affirmative action, like some kind of board that would sit above the industry and, you know, bureaucrats who would say, well, we need 6 more minorities in this film and 4 more in that film?
Well, on some level, it's not so much what anyone's asking for. We're pointing out a major disconnect between an industry that's telling stories about the nation. And I think Ingenue hit the nail on the head. It's really about the stories we're telling about ourselves, who we are, who we aren't, who's a part of the American narrative. And that's what Hollywood is missing. And the point I'm making in the reports that we're doing is that this does not make business sense, and it may no longer be sustainable. I mean, at some point, you know, the caller mentioned that African Americans are only 13% of the population. Well, this is not just about African Americans.
Right.
It's about Indian Americans, it's about Native Americans, it's about Latinos, it's about Asian Americans.
Yep.
It's about collectively a group of people who will shortly be the majority. And not only are they the majority, they over-index in terms of audiences. They're watching more TV than the white audience is, you know, per capita. They're buying more tickets. One of the things that our report is going to show tomorrow is that the number one film from 2014 that made over $1.1 billion, guess what? People of color bought 60% of the tickets.
What was it?
You cannot continue to make what you're making in Hollywood if you're not taking into account the needs of the people of color. And that's not just in front of the camera, but that's also behind the camera.
What film was that, Darnell?
That was Transformers Age of Extinction.
Okay. That was 60% of the tickets.
60% of the tickets. And of the top 10, 4 of the top 10 films, the majority of the tickets were bought by people of color.
We're talking about Hollywood's diversity problem. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Ingenue Ellis, Darnell Hunt says, out of L.A., look, it may not make business sense anymore, so business realities will change this. Do you buy that, Ingenue? And what about our caller who says, hey, what are you asking for, affirmative action here?
Well, I'm sorry, Tom. I'm not saying it's going to change it. I'm saying that there's a dysfunction here. I mean, it should change it, but it's not changing it because of these conflicting interests that we're talking about.
Ingenue, how about it?
Well, I feel that I really, you know, my goal, and I guess I'm insistent on this, is that we not make this about specifically just Hollywood. This is a problem that we have in our country right now about what story that we want to tell about the American narrative, what our history, our future. And this problem is being played out in Texas in Texas schools right now about what stories are and what history is being included in in Texas textbooks, and how that they are, you know, engineering and sort of excising history at choice, because there is this there's this history that they want, these folks in the Texas School Board want to project this.
But Hollywood is important even there. I mean, until Hollywood reflects American realities, you're going to have this big dream factory that resists other kind of on-the-ground realities, don't you think?
There's an echo chamber. Hollywood is echoing all of these things that Anjanou was talking about and reinforcing the continuation of, you know, white supremacy in many ways. And so that's why it's all connected, and it's important to take a look at Hollywood as part of this machinery.
Roberta in Detroit. Roberta, you're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to talk about a lot of important points, but I think that last caller, one of the last callers, really hit on it. When he spoke about these people who are unruly or...
Yeah.
He is a typical example of those gatekeepers who are everywhere out there in all kinds of positions, unfortunately, that they have this mindset that when other people are given opportunity, and that's the ultimate word, opportunity, somehow that's a handout. And yet when people, our brothers and sisters who are white, when they get it, it's just to be expected. They don't even see this sense of entitlement.
Mm.
They just refuse to accept it. And it's amazing to me as a person of color that I see these people who sit in positions, unfortunately, of power, and they just perpetuate this ugliness. And it hurts the country. It hurts the country, and they cannot see that.
Think about it. Think about it everywhere. Think about it in Hollywood. Roberta, I really appreciate your call from Detroit. We're not going to solve this one today, but boy, it's going to be interesting to watch the Oscars on Sunday night. Ziva Blade, do you feel a change in the climate here going forward? Has this year's uproar changed the chemistry? Is it enough to do that, Ziva?
I mean, it's cute that we're having these discussions.
Cute,
it's
okay.
Important.
Cute, great.
But I just, as I said before, I hope that, you know, the Oscars don't come and go and then we're like, okay, on to the next one. This is a conversation that we're going to have to keep having over and over again. And it's going to be uncomfortable, and it has to be uncomfortable because that's the only way it's going to change. So
well, I see that conversation going on from so many angles all over the country and certainly right here on this show in the last couple of years. Intense. It's got our attention this week in the Hollywood category. Ziva Blay at Two Brown Girls and The Huffington Post. Thank you so much for being with us today, Ziva.
Thank you.
Anjanou Ellis, star of Quantico on ABC. Good luck to you. Thank you for your big picture today. Thank you for joining us, Anjanou.
Thank you so much.
And Gregory Elwood, film critic there in Hollywood with awardscampaign.com. Thank you so much, Gregory. Darnell Hunt's big study comes out tomorrow from UCLA and the Ralph J. Bunch Center. Professor Hunt, thanks for being with us today. We'll go out with the score of Quentin Tarantino's Hateful Eight, stars Samuel L. Jackson. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.